you know, I have recently taken a photo from the wall of when our child was much younger and use that to remember just kind of where we're at. But it's just to kind of be that gentle reminder that, like, even though they're growing quickly as kids do, listen, we're still working through this. And it's like trying to really use that lens instead of like just being pissed off that I got a bedroom door slammed on my face.
I know you are doing the best that you can right now. Your relationships matter to you. You are important. And yet over time, we get stuck. We get lost, or we stop showing up as our true self. We get hung up on the stories we tell ourselves, the comparisons, or feeling like we are not good enough. I'm Not Your Shrink is a podcast aimed at helping you feel connected to yourself, to others, and to live a life that is in line with what matters most to you. I'm Dr. Tracy Dalglish, clinical psychologist and couples therapist. I bring you clinical knowledge and evidence-based research, experiences of sitting in the therapist chair, and being a wife and mother to talk about everyday issues we all face to help you change the dialogue in your life. Let's dive in.
I'm so excited that you clicked play and joined us for today's conversation. Today, I'm sitting with my husband, Greg, and we're going to be talking about what it means to be a parenting team, what it means to be parents to a highly sensitive child. And we had one of many events that came up recently where I thought, you know what, we really need to have this conversation on the podcast. We need to share what it's been like to be parents to an HSC, also where you and I are different people and how we can be on the same team, where I identify as a highly sensitive person and you are not,
but less so.
You're less so, exactly.
Still sensitive, less so.
Still sensitive, less so. So we're not going to use this episode to define and really go into the details of what a highly sensitive person is, but more so focusing on who we are and how to parent and how to be together in this parenting season.
Yeah, I think that's important because at the end of the day, we're not experts in that area. We're just on the journey. So there's tons of information out there. I think people can find that for themselves and we'll share our experiences and hopefully some things that have worked for us and some that haven't.
Yeah, absolutely. The event that took place recently was, and just to start this out for listeners, we really want to bring the stories to you and to use these stories as a way of learning and growing and stretching. But we also really want to respect the privacy of our children. And because we do have one boy and one girl, by using their pronouns, it shares who they are. So in today's episode, and what I do try to do on social media is I tend to use non-gender terms. So I do talk about my child, our kid, them and their, and that is in hopes of protecting their privacy.
Right. I mean, our kids do show up on social here and there. So we're not absolutists, but I think when it comes to this topic specifically, things stay on the internet forever. We want to try and be mindful.
Yeah, absolutely. So the event that happened recently was one morning we knew that our child was going to be having a play date. And it was an after-school event. We weren't going to be seeing them. And so as I'm getting ready, I say to our little one, hey, what might you do today if X, Y, Z happens and you're over at your friend's house? And immediately our child says, I'm not going to talk about that. There's anger. They walk away and slam the door. And what comes next is you down the hall. You kind of like walk down the hall and you're like, yeah, you went in directly in the front door there. And that didn't work. You got to go in the back door on that one.
I did. The irony there, though, is that 9 out of 10 times before, it was me trying to go in the front door. And really, that analogy came from you kind of as a strategy to kind of work through some of these, frankly, door slams in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that moment, I thought, it's so challenging. Because something we experience is as one child is highly sensitive and the other isn't, it feels like we are parenting two different children. And where one child those typical parenting strategies that we read on the nice tiles on Instagram or the courses we've taken, the books we've read, those strategies work and tend to work quite well. But then with the other child, you know, I can remember early on, you and I would just be confused and uncertain and frustrated and burnt out. Like, I can remember one time having this epic 2-hour meltdown. And it was at that point that we didn't know that we had a highly sensitive child. But that meltdown was so, so hard.
Right. So maybe let's start there then. So when do you think we knew we had a, air quotes, HSC?
Mm-hmm.
Don't love the labels, but I think we have to talk about it.
I think the labels give us a handle.
Okay.
We don't need to label people in terms of this is a negative piece. And I can even speak to that in terms of my own experience. I wish I had that handle earlier on so that I could understand why.
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah. Why does the world feel so overwhelming at times? And if I actually understood that my brain works differently, then I could have different tools and strategies. And instead, I spent so long trying to say, okay, just be in this room filled with people who are upset about things and feel all of this so deeply. Okay, don't have these strategies so that you can deal with this overwhelm and high sensitivity. So for me, the label actually is really helpful. But okay, back to the question.
Cool, yeah.
When did we know? I can think back to some early signs where shame was such an early experience for our child. And being a therapist, I often thought that adults learned early on this experience of shame as a result of being shamed in their environment. And so here we are before the age of 2. And our little one would just wash away in shame in this sense of the block tower fell over and that's not what they wanted to happen. Or there was a slight coloring out of the line, or they were trying to write something and it didn't work out perfectly. The other signs early on were things around how emotions were experienced. It was fast and furious. From 0 to 100. And it often came out as anger. And that for you and I was really hard. And so we think of generationally who we are and what we experienced growing up. Anger is one of those emotions that you push away. You don't feel it's bad to be angry.
Right.
And then here's this child in front of us, like having these explosions. And we didn't know what to do.
No, we didn't.
And that was triggering for both of us.
Big time. Yeah.
Like, how so for you?
Well, I think just the partly not knowing what to do, partly, you know, you hope it goes a different way. Your child's going to be different. He or she is too young to have this kind of outburst. And that predates kind of the understanding of some of the things that kind of contribute to this feeling, I guess. Particularly some of the I think for me was really critical to understand. You can speak to this was some of the environmental stuff, noise, sound, stimuli.
Yes. Yeah. We talk about this child and I both have a Whisper 3000 on.
Totally.
You like to say that I'm in the other room and I can hear what you muttering under your breath if you're upset with me.
Right.
And that this was the same for our child. It was the slightest noise. When I look back, I wish there was a deeper understanding of this because you and I have actually been sleep deprived for many years.
Yes. First you, then me.
Yes. Fair enough. Thank you. But this piece where actually, you know what, Greg, I think this is an important piece. I remember as a baby, we would go in trying to soothe by picking up our little one, rocking and holding, and it would be an escalation. And I'd be curious to hear if other highly sensitive parents experience this as well. But this was, for me, this is so strange. So it didn't feel good for this little one to be in such their deep emotion. And we almost needed to, like, be back. Like, we could rub their back a bit. Do you remember that as a baby?
Yeah. So, like, the four S's made it worse, you think, in retrospect?
In some ways. At times.
Yeah.
So this child learned to sleep through the night just on their own. Like 6-7 months. And then at 2:30, everything turned upside down. We were at multiple night wakings and like sometimes 4 or 5 times a night.
Correct.
And often those, I think initially were around noise. They were hearing noise in the middle of the night.
I think so.
And then the other element though, is because of the challenge of being able to express the emotion, express the anger, label what they're feeling, talk about. And that's the other key feature is like, it's really hard for them to go, as we said, in the front door to talk about something.
Well, they're too young to.
Right. Well, and but now with the skills that they can, it's still really challenging. So then in order to go into the front door to talk about and process these things, instead, I believe their mind was over analyzing and playing through these things while they're sleeping. And that was waking them up a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about it retroactively.
Yeah. I remember you and I were scrolling back and looking through photos. So this was at the point where we had already discovered and labeled our child as highly sensitive. And there are pictures of them at their birthday at daycare. And just the full-on tears of the child as people sang happy birthday to them. And that was that overstimulation.
Yeah.
That was the like, the noise is too much. It's too much. Make it stop. The flame of the candle is too much in front of me. My heart just broke because we just didn't have the skills back then.
No, I know. And people listening, they're probably thinking, well, that happened to my child too. And it's probably pretty common. But layer that in with all the other stuff. Yes. I think for us specifically, it was like, okay.
Right.
Right. I think that's important to flag.
Yeah. So some other things were like some clothes were not feeling good on them. Water sensitivity, going into the water. That's a great parenting story. The pool lessons. Food and texture. That was a really big one as well. Support for today's episode comes from Loop Earplugs. Driving in the car with the dog whining and the kids fighting in the backseat is my definition of overstimulation. And the more overstimulated I become, the more irritable I am, and then I am not the mom I want to be. So I decided to give Loop earplugs a try, and I'm so glad I did. I was blown away by how comfortable they are and just how adjustable they are for my individual needs. I also love that they're stylish in my ears and not some big chunky piece. I've been using the Loop Engage, which focuses on decreasing the amount of noise around me, whether I'm in the car with the kids or if I'm at the show. I love this option because I don't want to miss out on what's happening around me, but sometimes I just need a little bit of support. Plus, we love their kids' version, which we were able to take to the movies for our highly sensitive child. I'm so excited that Loop Earplugs is offering you, my community, a discount so that you too can tackle those overstimulating moments while also still being engaged with the activities and the people you love. Visit loopearplugs.com and use my exclusive code Loop times Dr. Tracy for 10% off your order. That's LOOPX DRTRACY for 10% off your order at loopearplugs.com. Support for today's episode comes from Cozy Earth. You know I am all about caring for ourselves, especially in these busy years with our young kids. We are pulled in so many directions, but I think it's so important for us to find ways to nurture ourselves that require no additional time from us. I should probably let you in on one of my favorite things to do to look after me, and that is to get a good night's sleep on amazing sheets. I am beyond thrilled to bring you Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding products with an exclusive Mother's Day offer just for my listeners. We've got a code. It's SHRINK, S-H-R-I-N-K, for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. Now, I didn't believe it until I tried them, but I firmly stand by my sleep improving with the temperature regulating technology, which adapts to your body's needs. For the past year, I have not slept on any other brand of sheets. Cozy Earth uses the very best fabrics, materials, and wares, offering superior softness for you to sink into at the end of those long days. I look forward to getting into bed, and we've been loving the sheets for over a year, and their sleepwear is so unbelievably soft, and it's made with such great quality. But the best part is that if you're worried about commitment, enjoy a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on all of your purchases. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use promo code SHRINK for an exclusive 35% off, and give the luxury she deserves with Cozy Earth. So I think then the other thing that you and I have really talked about is just the difference between you and I as people, in the sense that I am a highly sensitive person. So when I thought about this experience and us talking to our community here, something that I wanted to share was this aha moment for myself of realizing that this wasn't just the experience of my child, but also my experience. And I remember at one point thinking, oh, this is what it was like for my parents. They didn't know what to do with my wave of emotion that would come out of nowhere. I remember feeling really big anger. And so then when I'm working with clients today, when I'm working with parents, even for ourselves, like the anger that is so big feels overwhelming and scary. Hmm. Like, don't you, like, that's something that is so key for you that really triggers you. What are those moments like for you?
The anger?
When they're angry and their anger goes from 0 to 100 and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, I think part of it's just the pace of it. Like it's so accelerated. Like there's no buildup. It just kind of like, again, it often manifests itself as running away, slamming doors. Like it becomes kind of
body slamming.
Yeah, it becomes this kind of like physical thing that I have this like not great reaction to sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten better as I've kind of understood that it's not actually that. It's kind of all these other things. And I've really learned to let it go, for lack of a better term. But I think in the moment, it is hard because like a man, it's like very like in your face, and the physicality of it is certainly triggering. Like it, like deep down, it's like, this is not cool, but trying to get past that. And then I also really have to be mindful that like, I'm still dealing with like a young developing brain. I'm not dealing with like an adult, right? Where like if this is the behavior from a buddy or a brother in your 20s or 30s, it might be a different story. So, you know, I have recently taken a photo from the wall of when our child was much younger and use that to remember just kind of where we're at. But it's just to kind of be that gentle reminder that like, even though they're growing quickly as kids do, listen, we're still working through this. And it's like trying to really use that lens instead of like just being pissed off that I got a bedroom door slammed on my face.
Yeah, I think there's a very real reality to when our children can then verbally express themselves. They're more autonomous in the sense of, you know, I can read the story on my own. I can dress myself. I am showering on my own now. I don't need you to bathe me. Our brains click in and say, oh, you're functioning on your own. And so then we also go to this place of saying, you should be able to deal with this.
Ought to be, yeah.
You ought to be dealing with this emotion. And I share this with all of my clients. The brain is not done developing until 24, 25 years old. And I almost have, so through my nearly 2 decades now of working with people, I'm really conceptualizing adulthood as starting at 27, 28, because of the prefrontal cortex is not done its development until 24, 25, and later in boys.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my next.
Yes.
So what's the difference with men? I'm sure it's pretty drastic. I mean, we've experienced it. If you've been through your 20s, like,
of course,
think of the dynamic with male and female through that age. It can be pretty, I can certainly speak for my own, it was a mess at 21.
Tell us about your mess.
Well, no, that's another episode, but just in terms of like
emotion regulation.
Yeah, or just like life skills.
Yeah. And so even then, the ability to deal with anger, the ability to know what to do in that moment. So for you and I, what's been really helpful is we have latched on to Dana's words, how she says it. She says, they don't have the skills yet. And that has been like, for me, has been a complete turnaround point for me.
Yeah.
Where it's like, right, you are yelling in my face right now. It's not because you are trying to disrespect me.
Right.
It's because you don't have the skills of what to do with the emotion. It's so big. I think when it comes to the high sensitivity, one of the things I wish more parents knew when it comes to this anger. So I'm speaking from my own experience as a child, but and also witnessing my children, working with parents, is that anger is not an emotion to be afraid of. I know it comes with a lot of scary words sometimes. And anger is not a bad thing. Anger helps us to understand what we need. It can help us to very much feel a real experience of something doesn't feel fair or I feel wronged in this moment. And again, whether it's not for us as parents to agree with it or not, it's for us to then give our kids the skills and tools of what to deal with it.
Yeah. And I think when we're triggered by that anger, I think most of us probably need to look inward. Like, what's that? It's a reflection of what's happening for us, not necessarily them.
Mm, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Often, not always, but.
Yeah, but we, you know, if we didn't learn how to deal with our anger, then it feels scary to see our child experience it. Because we're like, oh no, what's going to happen next? Pack it away. Don't feel it.
Scary or triggering as hell.
Yes. Yes, but it's triggering because what's underneath that? Mm. Often fear. Uncertainty, loss of control. That 2-hour meltdown, our child was much younger at the point, but I remember being like, this is never going to end. We will never get through this. And that's incredibly hard. I think one of the things that has been really helpful for our journey is me helping you to see, because I'm a highly sensitive person, what it's like to actually be in my body, which sounds kind of funny to say, but in the sense of like, well, you did it the other day in the car. I said to you, I'm not talking to you right now because I'm actually overwhelmed and overstimulated. And you were so good in saying, why don't you put your earplugs in right now? I've got the kids in the back seat. Go ahead and do that. And so you can then start to see how our world feels really different. And so I've been helping you to understand like, okay, this shirt is like irritating me and it feels like 1,000 paper cuts. And you're like, okay, I get it. Or after being with clients all day and I get home, you're understanding that I need that kind of space and time. Space and time. Like, I can't emphasize that enough.
Right. I mean, but you're an adult. She's also a clinical psychologist who's able to tell me that. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge is, though, like, how do we, because our child's not going to be able to articulate that necessarily.
Right. Right. And that is something that we've been having to teach them is, how do you label this? So something that I did one day laying with our child at bedtime, I'd said, hey, you know what? Our brains are not like other brains. They take in a lot of information. We feel this much more deeply, which means that we have to then do things to look after ourselves in different ways. And so you're always allowed to tap out and to say, oh, it's too much. I'm going to go do. And then we've talked about those strategies to be able to help them through that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But then for you, I think what was really important, the point that I want to make there is how you've been able to separate their behavior from that sense of like, this child is trying to disrespect me or hurt me.
Yeah. It's a real unlock for people is the depersonalization. You know, if you're listening to this and thinking this could be your child and, you know, that can really help you along the spectrum to be able to work through some of these big feelings and big outbursts and things before you may have just really triggered you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that depersonalization for you has been really important. And then giving space. I think something you've also been really good at is acknowledging that I like to go in and sit there and be in the room. And of course, because our child does different things to us. As we're different parents than we're supposed to be. And for me, I feel okay being in the room. For you, you don't. And so then sometimes you leave. And while that might not be something that I would do, I also respect your process. And that's something that you need to do in order to calm your body before being able to move forward. Do you feel confident in handling that like 0 to 100 behavior now?
Confident? Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've certainly had more experience with it now. I think a lot of the things we've already spoken about today have given me kind of the strategies to be able to do that and really understanding where the behavior is coming from. You know, I know the old-fashioned suck it up approach doesn't work.
For our kids, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. Particularly the, you know,
the highly sensitive.
The highly sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like just push through.
Yeah. You know, I do struggle a little bit in that I fear swinging too far to the permissive side, in all honesty. So trying to navigate that has been a more recent challenge for me. But I think by and large, yeah, I'm able to kind of ride the wave, we like to say sometimes, and get through it. So I definitely feel more confident. I mean, it's ongoing though. And, you know, the teenage years are coming. So I think this set of challenges will shift.
It's going to change for sure. We're laying a good foundation.
Kind of the obvious, but
yeah. I have a few moments in our parenting journey that are so pivotal. And it also like just really represents the highly sensitive child. One was being at a farm and there was this bounce, you know, like the half pillow to get our child to bounce on it. And like, this was,
yeah,
like this child screamed at me. It felt like everybody at the farm was looking. And then I ended up bringing the child on, kicking and screaming at me. And we rode the wave of emotion. And guess who had a great time? The other one that really stands out is we were down south and on a vacation. And there's this really fun kid pool. And one kid's having a great time and the other one's like, no, I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. And I know for so many of us, we struggle with how do I respect their boundaries? But how do I know when to push and guide and reach those outer limits? And this was one of those moments where I was, and I think this is also my stubbornness, because maybe this is where you and I are a bit different. You might have backed away. And I literally was standing there with the kid at the top of the slight kitty slide. This was not a scary one.
Like,
I said, I'm going to hold you the whole time, and screamed and screamed and screamed. I know everybody at that pool was looking at me and I was sweating and it's like the whole world goes black on me. And I am like, we're going, like, it's almost, yeah, it's that stubbornness. Like, we're going down. And what ended up happening though was magic. I had a great time, right, going down the slide, and as a go-to memory, it's like Inside Out, one of my favorite movies to talk about emotions. And on Inside Out, Joy is trying to hold on to all of these memories, these core memories, but then, and she keeps trying to tell Sadness, no, get out of here, don't be part of this. And then what they discover down the road is actually Sadness and pain often comes before those joy moments.
Hmm.
And so while our child doesn't remember necessarily the screaming part, they remember how cool that slide was.
Right. So I think that that's an interesting example, because I think a lot of people listening will kind of struggle. So where's the line? How do we understand this sensitivity, this higher level of emotion, but how do we also encourage, push their limits in a loving, healthy way? How do we, and this is something that I think I'm struggling with, is like, how do we do that? We don't want to feel like we're caving,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to respect this circumstance, mm-hmm, air quotes. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, we need to try hard stuff. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure many parents that listening, swimming, great example.
Ugh.
Right?
Our first swimming lesson was so bad that the instructor asked me to leave the pool.
Right. But that's it's a safety thing.
Of course. Yeah. And I think this is also too where you and I, we both need to give each other, ourselves, a lot of permission that we are growing and evolving. In the last 5 years, each moment we are tackling this, we do become stronger parents and we do become more practiced in this. So had we been talking about this 5 years ago, this would have been much different of a conversation, right? So I like to preface that by saying we are coming through in some way. And I think if I look back, I can see some key things that we're doing now that maybe we could have been doing earlier. One is the initial reply from a highly sensitive child is going to be no. Or, you know, their response even to losing, they don't like to lose. That's very stimulating.
Stay away from Monopoly.
Yeah. No, you just need more practice, right? Or find cooperative games. But the sense of recognizing that this is their way of being. It's not our job to change who they are, but our job is to help them ride the wave of emotion. So recognize they're going to say no initially. That doesn't make it a no. It means they're expressing what the initial turmoil is, which is, oh, that's going to change things inside my body. And that could be very overwhelming. So no, I don't want to do that. So you and I have come to realize that the no is the first response, but it doesn't mean we're not going. Right. Otherwise, you and we would have missed out on a lot of experiences, right?
Right.
So that's one piece. But then I think what then we also do is we talk a lot about it. There's a lot of front loading of, you know, and I've even said this to our child of, hey, isn't it interesting? And I do this while we're driving or we're like building something beside each other or coloring. Isn't it interesting? Your first response is no. But then afterwards, you end up having a really good time.
Yeah, you do that a lot.
Yeah. Well, we become these little cognitive behavioral parents, right?
Right.
CBT parents. So talking about it in that way and doing a lot of front loading and experimenting with our thoughts of, hey, going to the ski resort that one time, the hill, that thought came out of, we're going to have to park away so far. We're not going to have a spot. And I said, hey, isn't that an interesting thought? Thoughts are just thoughts, but let's challenge that thought and see what happens when we get up. Yeah.
Was that you? I think that was me.
I remember specifically that wasn't you.
Okay.
But you can sometimes do the predicting the future thoughts too. Yeah. So I think in some ways then a lot of talking ahead of time, and then it is the nudging forward, validating, nudging forward, witnessing emotion, nudging forward, right? Like we got to learn to do hard things. And the more we try, then the more practice we become.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I can just think so many people will be like, they want to respect it, but they don't want to be held hostage.
Yeah.
Right. And I think I land there too.
Yeah. Remind yourself that you can be a sturdy parent and you can really weather these storms. You're not going to do it perfectly, but if you can say to yourself, I've got this, I'm going to be the parent, you know, Dr. Becky's analogy here of being the sturdy pilot, I'm going to fly this plane and move forward. And that will help our children. So a lot of people in this conversation ask, how do we become a team? How do we be on the same page as parents? And if our strategies align, what do you think about you and I in that sense?
Well, I think it's a process for sure. I think each person and their dynamics is going to bring different histories and experiences to it. You know, how they were brought up and behaviors were modeled to them is going to be pretty impactful. You know, I think by and large for us, our upbringings were somewhat similar, a bit of shame-based parenting in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about maybe even some of the like soap in the mouth.
Yeah, or threats of it. Like, so I think, you know, where we come from is pretty similar. So that probably allows us to be on a similar page easier, where you can imagine couples who have wildly different upbringings, maybe different cultural norms, all kinds of stuff that play into it, might have a harder time.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of put it back on you, Dr. Tracy, the couples therapist, how they then can work towards getting on the same page in that sense.
Yeah. And I think what's really important for parents to understand, and even I had to learn this in our parenting journey, is that when I meet with a client, I ask, tell me about this parent, tell me about that parent. So tell me about mom, tell me about dad. And what I am looking for is the unique relational dynamic that you have with each parent and the strengths that you get from that, but also how you build that relationship. They're supposed to be different relationships.
Right.
You can't have two people the same. And so I think sometimes what we're doing, especially today, is we're scared of what's going to happen to our children if you don't parent exactly the same way as me.
Yeah. And I think that's a mistake.
And I do. I agree. I think that's a mistake.
Yeah.
And so what that first comes down to is our values. And so you and I have even had this conversation around, what are we afraid of? What are you afraid of if you're validating their emotion? And, you know, I know many men will say, I'm afraid that they'll be soft or they're going to be picked on.
Yeah.
And that's a very real fear. And also then let's also talk about what it means to be so sturdy in your emotional experience to say to your friend, and we've watched our kids do this too, hey, I don't like that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And then we've also watched our kids get swallowed into the emotion and cry with their friends. I know the teenagers are going to be a doozy on that one. But so as a couples therapist, I think it's really important is, are your values in terms of what you want your children to move towards? Do you want your kids to be respectful people? Do you want them to be authentic and to live their truth? Most people will say yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then let's talk about what are the fears in there around some of the strategies that might feel good and how can we make it work? Recognizing that you and I are not going to be the same. And I love this part about you and I because I am the therapist. I was so good at going in with our highly sensitive child with the validation. Oh, I see you. This is so hard. And that with a highly sensitive child, that's the front door. That makes it 100 times worse. We do not want to be going in front door. And I was making it worse.
That's interesting because I think a lot of people listening might think, oh, that's probably exactly what they need. Oh,
no.
Why not?
Because their shame and vulnerability lives beside each other. Mm-hmm. And it's too intense. And so this experience then when your child is saying to you, and so I learned this watching Dr. Becky's workshop on deeply feeling kids, is that when our child says, get out, she's framed it as, it's as if they're talking to their own internal experience of how bad they feel. They're saying, get out, it's so bad inside of me.
Right.
That was a huge shift in how I understood that as well. But yeah, so I had to turn down the dial on my therapist self and turn up the dial of how do we just regulate bodies? And for me, it's the, I don't get to go in right away and talk about this and process what just happened. I have to now have the patience and come around this in another way, which again, going back to the story I started out with in the sense of, hey, what are you going to do with this play date later on?
Right.
That was wrong timing. So you and I being on the same page, I have to admit that initially we were not. I used to be the parent down the hall being like, hey, Greg, validate.
The micromanager.
I was I'm a great micromanager. I don't like the micromanager term. I know what I need. But I think what really helped me to remember is that you are different from me. And you have so many great qualities that you're bringing to our children, and they're going to be different than how I do it. Doesn't make you wrong. It doesn't make me right. Our shared value is that we're raising respectful, authentic, self-trusting kids.
Right. I agree with that. Okay, Dr. Tracy, here's a question. How do you handle it, or how would you have handled it, or did you handle it when I did things that or interventions in a way that you didn't like? I mean, I think that happens less now, but more so early on. And for folks who are kind of at the beginning of this journey, I think that's going to be probably more common than not. So,
yeah, I think of a work example even. Can you imagine running a meeting and maybe you've derailed in that meeting and a teammate or your manager says to you in front of everybody, what are you doing? This isn't what we agreed on. How could you you can't present it this way. Like, you can just imagine, right? Like, that it just doesn't feel good. So I think what is really important when it comes to parenting is that you and I have these conversations away from the children. We do want to present as a united front, that they don't split us, but that I trust you and you trust me. And so as long as your child is safe, then, and that's emotionally and physically safe, then you being able to park this and come back to it at another time. And sometimes, depending on who the person is, I'm going to ask you, can I give you feedback? Is now a time where we can talk about what happened earlier? Like, do you want to talk about it? And if this is a repeated thing that's happening, I think there is something. And again, this is like it depends conversation of what's happening, right? Because if this is like, you've had a bad day, we need to have permission for each other. Like, yeah. You get to have a one-off. And when I see you having that one-off, sometimes I say to you, yeah, this was just a doozy. And I let it go. And then when it comes to, though, if, say, you are yelling more or you're more annoyed or you've been shut down more, that's a bigger conversation for us, where you and I are both showing up to the table saying like, hey, let's check in with each other. What's going on? And I think this is also where for couples, they do need to have that regular practice of the weekly check-in, of meetings and practicing conversations of where are we at today? Yeah. How are things going? What's something stressful that's coming up this week for you? And how can we support each other? Like, how are we feeling about our love?
Yeah, that's great.
But I really think that key piece in there that so many parents miss is that when you are connected, when you're close, trusting, you feel secure together, you're going to get through those storms. It doesn't necessarily mean you're doing it the same way, but no. You know you get through it together. And then also learning the art of feedback, that I can't come to you and just say, you know, you suck. What's going on? Yeah. Right? There's like
soft startups, the 5-to-1 ratio or whatever it is.
Yeah, you got it. So
yeah. So I think what's a little bit different for me is given your level of expertise, and it's a little bit harder to bring some of this stuff up when I maybe have a different philosophy or thought.
Which is to say, I'm also not a perfect parent.
Of course,
I make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get triggered. I get angry.
Yeah.
I've yelled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it comes with a bit of experience. I think lately I've been better at that. But yeah, I think that's going to be a dynamic in many people's relationships. And mm-hmm. So it's a little bit harder, but I think timing is really, really key. I mean, it's got to be, you know, there's got to be a bit of a cooling off period. I think that's pretty important. And
something that Myla and I talk about in our Same Page webinar, which is housed inside of Be Connected, so my relationship program, that's one of the webinars that's included in the program. There's so many great sessions in there. That's one of my favorites. But we talk about what does it mean to be parent A and parent B? And I can remember working with a couple where they got into this parenting friction. And it's like, well, the last time I stepped in, you were angry at me. So then I see little dude melting down. I'm not going to step in this time because why? You got angry at me last time.
Yeah.
And it's like, woof, we need a recalibration here so that it's going to work for both of you. And that has also really helped us in the sense of when you're in doing bedtime, I'm going to let you do that. You are parent A in that moment. Yeah. I am stepping out of that. That's good.
Yeah. And if you never let the other partner fail or make mistakes, like truly, how are you going to learn?
Right.
There has to be a good feedback mechanism, certainly, and at the right time. But yeah, you gotta let them trip up a little bit.
What are our approaches, do you think, when it comes to that sense of being burnt out or overwhelmed? How do you and I get through that? Because the reality is, this is exhausting. You know, I know I've texted some of my friends who also have a highly sensitive child, and there are times where we are like, yeah, we just played a game and it was so intense and.
Yeah. So how do you and I get through it? Mm-hmm.
When we're burnt out, where we don't have the village here in Ottawa.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah.
You know, we're overwhelmed. We've got work. We've got March break. We've got illnesses.
I mean, we got to communicate because we have to say, I need time. You need time. How can we make this work? I think having a bit of solo time is one of the most powerful things you can do. Go work out, go for a run, go for a walk.
Like 10 minutes. If you can just take 10 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to, like, don't make it bigger than it is. I mean, I know my activities take a long time, but, you know, in this case.
Do they?
They do.
But we do that, though. We're very good at doing an all or nothing. So I think we do need to have those big activities that are big bucket fillers. And then we also need to have those micro moments where it's like, I'm going to go have a bath tonight. Yeah. Or go for the run, get out. This is your window. And to really take it. And I think what we need to recognize too is that we're like, okay, I'm going to go into the room and I'm going to like shut the door. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm really good about pulling out my phone when really what I need is to put my body against the wall, maybe do some temperature, cold water splashing on my face. The last thing I need is a screen. And I recommend to people that if you are overstimulated, turn off the screens. You've got to turn the screens off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the micro moments piece is key. Because as you're coming through this stuff, you're just not going to have this time or bandwidth to do something major. Take the short-term win.
Yeah, totally. I think there's also something that you and I have gotten better at doing, and it's something that I wish more people learn to do, which is mastering that repair. And being able to recognize that having these difficult moments between us as parents is not a make or break. But instead, when we have these moments of conflict and distance and separation, what's so beautiful about a relationship is then being able to come back together and to feel closer afterwards. And those repair moments, especially when we learn how to do it, can become really powerful markers in our relationship. And if people haven't had a chance yet, check out my repair workshop. It got so many great pieces of feedback around it.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's been so cool to see how helpful it's been for people. So we'll put the link in the show notes there. That will not take you a lot of time. I jump right into teaching you what that repair actually looks like, why you need to do it, and how you can feel close again after having a fight. All right. Any last thoughts about being a parent, being a team to a highly sensitive child?
It's a journey. I think if you can take some time and really depersonalize a lot of the behavior and kind of lean into kind of what are some of those needs and things that are underlying it, particularly for me, it was the environmental sensitivities and just the overstimulation. And if you can kind of lean into that and again, not look at the behavior as something that's personal towards you, I mean, I think that's a really big first step kind of on the path to not fixing this, because you don't fix this. You live and work with it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I like to remind myself about space. So I had already mentioned the anger and how important space is. Not being afraid of big emotions. They're not scary. Emotions come and go, and it's true for our highly sensitive children as well. But I also like to remind people that your child is going to get there and it's going to be slower. So watching the difference between our two, one can tolerate games and losing quite easily. And the other one now is starting to come back to the games as we do it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And they're getting there. I remember even around learning to bicycle and take the training wheels off, I had to really remind myself, our child is not going to college with the training wheels on.
Right.
And just because the high seeking child down the road is like fearlessly going at 3 years old doesn't mean that my child has to be 3 or 4 with training wheels off.
Right.
We all get our own journeys. And I think that is something so beautiful for us to remember.
And I think what's kind of cool too is like, if you have a highly sensitive child and they do kind of work through some of this stuff, and I don't want to say outgrow it, but do some harder things, and as they get older, challenge some of their beliefs a little bit. And it's actually super, super rewarding.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
And then when you and your partner can be on a team together, where, again, don't just focus on the parenting strategies. Focus on how you communicate. Focus on how you repair, how you come back and be close again, and have those regular things each week that keep you feeling good.
Yeah. And it's okay to be different. Like, lean into that a little bit.
Totally.
I mean, as long as kind of the underlying values are similar, I think that's kind of the foundational piece. But you're not going to agree on everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much information out there, particularly, right? Like, you're each going to filter it in a certain way. So how you bring that to the table with your partner, how you communicate that.
Thank you, Greg, for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad we had this conversation.
Yeah, this is good.
If you enjoyed today's episode, I would love for you to share it with somebody that you love, or I would love for you to leave a review, click the 5 stars. I read all of the reviews and it helps other people find the podcast. Any of the resources we talked about today, I'm going to put in the show notes. And if you'd like to send us a question or a conversation idea for us to have, you can go to my website, drtracyd.com/podcast. Fill out the form, tell us what's going on, and we will answer your questions here on the podcast. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and I'll see you next week. Remember, this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not substitute for the care from a licensed mental health care provider.
Settling is not an option for me. Everything I desire is already mine. What if you can have it all? Because every day is for the girls.
Hello, hello. Welcome to For the Girls podcast, hosted by Victoria Alario, for the girls who want more. Listening to For the Girls will have you ready to raise the bar, stop settling for the bare minimum, and start believing you can have it all, and step into the 2.0 version of you. You can catch a new episode of For the Girls every Monday across all podcast platforms. Until next time, girls.